This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Hey folks, thanks so much for listening. We are glad that you've joined us today. It's going to be a great show. Hey, we would love you forever if you would take a quick second and subscribe to the show or leave a review on your podcast listening platform of choice, but especially Apple Podcasts, that helps us the most. That just helps our show find its way to the listening ears of new athletes. Great topic today, talking about tapering for your next race. How to show up rested and ready to crush your next big day on the race course. Joining us for this conversation is Coach John Mayfield. John is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who leads TriDot's athlete services, ambassador, and coaching programs. He has coached hundreds of athletes ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. John, what's up, man?
Going really well, Andrew. Thanks.
Next up is pro triathlete and coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot from a beginner to top age grouper to a professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Andrew.
I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our race taper main set topic, and then wind things down with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Between Gatorade showers, pitchers of beer, and champagne showers, pouring a beverage over the head of an athlete or a coach is a common way to celebrate a big win. If your tri support crew were celebrating you at the finish line by pouring something over your head, what beverage would you choose? Coach John Mayfield, what are you thinking here?
It would definitely not be Gatorade. By the end of a race,
that checks out. Yeah.
Not wanting any more Gatorade, especially like we all know how like sticky it gets and nasty. So definitely not Gatorade. Not really a champagne kind of guy, and I feel like that'd be kind of a waste of beer. I do my first craving after a race, really of any distance. I always want soda. So that's definitely one of my go-tos in the long course races that have cola out at the aid stations. I hit that every chance. And ironically, as much as I disdain Gatorade afterwards, I still...
You still want that cola.
Yeah. So I'll go with that, even though that would be like incredibly nasty and sticky as well. Since you asked the weirdest questions.
Yeah, I'm good
with
at that.
The weirdest right, answer. Yeah. So there
that's
you go.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here. I like to think people tune in for the warm-up question and then just duck out after that because that's the best part. that's the highlight of the show to me. So you heard it. I mean, next time John Mayfield crosses the finish line, instead of us all shaking up some champagne and releasing it over his face, we can do that with a couple bottles of Coke. And
yeah, just, or maybe like ginger ale. That would kind of be like champagne. Ooh.
Yeah, look probably settle the tummy after a long race.
Yeah, yeah,
checks out. Makes sense. Coach Elizabeth James, what are you thinking here?
I'm thinking this was a hard question, and I at first was like, oh, thank goodness that he called on John first. But I feel like I still don't have a great answer. The only thing I can come up with right now is something with ice. I mean, I prefer racing in warmer weather. I don't like the cold at all. I don't do well in the cold. So hopefully it's a race where it's nice and warm. I need to cool down a little bit at the finish line. So something nice and chilled would be appreciated. But I'll be honest, Andrew, that's all I've got right now. I don't know.
That's Elizabeth's nice way of saying, I'm going to be honest, Andrew, this is a weird question. that's what that is. But really, Elizabeth, it sounds like for you, it's okay, let's just bypass that and get me to an ice bath as quick as possible after a nice hot race.
There we go. Just promoting the recovery.
Okay. All right. There you go. So for me, I'm going to give two answers here. I'm going to give my truthful answer and my fun answer because truthfully, the only thing I would want is water. And that's not because I feel sticky after a race. It's not because I am averse to, like, I literally, like, I hate my hands and my face getting messy with, like, food items. When I eat barbecue, I go through, like, napkins like crazy. I will barbecue off my hands and face.
This is true. We've seen this happen.
I go through double the napkins that my wife does at any given meal that we're eating at our home. If I were a spy and got captured, the only thing they would have to do to break me is restrain my hands and put a dot of barbecue sauce on my hands or face. I would tell them everything they wanted to know immediately in exchange for getting that wiped off. During our wedding, my wife's greatest expression of her love for me was not the vows or the first dance. It was not smashing the cake in my face during the cutting of the cake. She knows I cannot stand having food on my hands or face, liquids on my hands or face. I freak out. I've got to get it off. So truthfully, my answer is water. Anything else that'd get poured on me or over me, I wouldn't handle it well. I'd freak out a little bit.
Sometimes your answers are as weird as your questions. And I got to say, water, it would be like, there's something about water. I've never understood this. You can get in like the salt water on the swim and have the Gatorade and all that all over your body. It seems fine. You get in a nice, clean, freshwater shower. And all of a sudden, you find out everywhere that you've chafed.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, It feels like fire when the salty Gatorade was fine hours earlier. Now the fresh water, for some reason, is highly irritating. So the water may not be a great answer. Just maybe reconsider. Maybe your second answer would be better than your first.
This is true. Although I feel like almost any liquid might do that in that circumstance. But my second answer, just to have more fun with this question, and if someone was like, Andrew, you can't say water, that's dumb. We're going to do this to you anyway, and it's not going to be water. Pick something else. I thought about it. And do you guys remember from the late 80s, early 90s, growing up playing sports as a kid, like Capri Suns and Squeeze-Its were like the common, like parents would bring that as like the drink for the kids after a T-ball game kind of drink. They were super bright colors. They're probably terrible for us. They're probably nothing but sugar. but so just to have more fun with it, I think if everybody, because if you squeeze a tube of Squeeze-It really hard, the liquid just comes shooting out. And so a bunch of people at the finish line shooting off some multicolored Squeeze-Its would be quite a picture for sure. If I had to pick something different. Do not do this to me at any of my upcoming races.
Of course, the photographer is thinking about the picture aspect, though, here. Like, oh, that would
be
fun.
Cool
because picture.
That's something that the champagne shower, right, with the pros on the podium and they're shooting champagne everywhere. It makes it's a fun image. It's fun imagery for sure. But
so we've been hearing it for a year and a half. Ironman Texas, Andrew at the finish line.
Do not squeeze this to me at Ironman Texas. That is the last thing I want
to
deal with.
You know what to do, people.
Oh, gosh. Hey, we're going to throw this question out to you guys on social media, partially because we're interested in your answers and partially to deflect from everything I just said. So find us on Facebook. I am Trot.out Facebook group. We're going to throw this question out to you and see, do you have any more creative answers than the three of us did? What do you think would be kind of a fun, different twist on the beverage shower at the end of your next race?
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Our main set today is brought to you by Tritats. Whether you're a seasoned Ironman or gearing up for your first local sprint try, Tritats will help you make your mark. These tough, stylish, and easy-to-use race number tattoos make you look and feel like a pro. I personally have raced countless local sprint and Olympic tries where I showed up thinking I had plenty of time to settle in the transition, only to find a massive line waiting to be body marked. Switching to Tritats has allowed me to show up on race morning with my focus on the finish line, not the body marking line. If you have an Ironman race this year, their Iron Tats are made especially for you. Iron Tats body mark you for that one key race and include the all-famous M-Dot logo. Friends don't let friends race with Sharpie on numbers. So as a friend of the podcast, head to tritats.com and use promo code TRIDOT for 10% off your order. Again, that's tritats.com, promo code TRIDOT. We push ourselves through interval after interval, training session after training session, all to get stronger and faster for our next big race. But at some point in the training cycle, we have to back off in our training in order to show up on the race morning with fresh legs and primed muscles ready to crush the course. Tritout, of course, has the pre-race taper down to a science. And so today we will talk through nailing this key part of a training cycle to ensure our best race possible. So Elizabeth, John, just to make sure everyone is in our audience is entering this conversation ready to learn, lay the groundwork for us. What is a taper?
The taper is the transition from training with the intent of like fitness or performance gains to training with the intent of preparing to race. So it's the gradual reduction in training load that provides for adaptation, for rest and recovery that really allows you to be race ready.
So fitness follows 7 to 10 days after your training. So for today, the fitness that you have really is the product of the training that you did a week and a half ago and everything prior. So everything you've done in the last couple of days is still largely in that adaptation process. Your body's still recovering from that. So as of today, you don't necessarily have the benefit of the training that you did yesterday. That's not going to come for another week and a half. So that's part of this process here is realizing that our ability to gain more fitness has stopped. So what we want to do now is shift focus from gaining more fitness, gaining more race readiness, to preparing to maximize. So it's allowing the body to rest, to top off all the tanks. So it's recovery, it's glycogen replenishing, electrolytes, all those things that your body uses and depletes in training. We want to, through these last couple of days, couple of weeks, be able to have everything topped off so you're completely fresh, completely ready to race.
So in letting our bodies get primed and rested for race day, what differences should we expect to see in our workouts during this period that we're tapering?
So it's going to be a gradual reduction in training volume. So that's what we mean by taper. It's a gradual reduction. So there are several common mistakes that are made throughout the taper. One of them is not maintaining the frequency of sessions. So that's kind of the first rule is to stick with the schedule that you've had. So the sessions themselves are going to look different, but keep with what you've been doing. So if you're training 7 days a week, 6 days a week, headed into race, maintain that throughout your taper. So you don't want to necessarily reduce the frequency of the sessions that you do. And to a certain extent, you want to maintain the sequence of sessions as well. That's going to go. But so the biggest thing you're going to see is that gradual reduction in volume. So your hours are going to drop. And another common mistake is not including intensity. So they think oftentimes that, again, we're looking to rest up, so we want to take it easy. And the easier we go, the more we're able to rest and recover. But there are certain benefits to including the intensity back in. So that's something that we don't want to do is neglect the intensity piece of it. So we drop the volume, we maintain or sometimes even increase the intensity in these last few sessions.
And I remember being a little surprised my first race on TriDot. I remember being a little bit surprised when I hit that week before the race and seeing some of that intensity still on the schedule, because in your mind it's like, oh man, I still have to go hard this week. I'm racing this weekend. I don't want to get tired before the race. But you do it and you kind of realize it and you learn that's keeping you primed. That's keeping you ready.
It can certainly be a little counterintuitive, but yeah, it does help maintain muscular elasticity. So we're keeping the muscles ready to race. It helps maintain neuromuscular activation. So those neural pathways that have been developed throughout training, we want to maintain those. And then it's going to promote recovery as well. So throughout your normal training, it's that overall training stress load that you've been doing. So now that training load is reduced, is tapered down, we still want to invoke that training response or that recovery so that your body stays in that state of making those adaptations and recovering. So it's just a little bit of stimulus to keep the body doing what it's been doing.
So yeah, I mean, those sessions are maybe going to have some shorter intervals with some similar intensity to what you've been doing. But then there's also that additional recovery in between them too. I think a good example of this is, you know, just a session that you would have during race week. So like race week builds on the bike. You might see 3 to 4 intervals where you're progressing throughout the interval up to your threshold intensity. And I mean, we were just discussing here how a lot of athletes think that they need to sit on the couch for 2 weeks and really rest up. Or yeah. they mm-hmm. look at the schedule and they're like, what? What do you mean there's intensity? I think it's becoming more and more understood, but it's kind of an education thing too of how do we really prepare our body best for race day? So it's maintaining that schedule, maintaining frequency, including some intensity as well. That's really going to prepare you for race day.
Yeah, Elizabeth, I kind of humorously think back to my first 70.3, which was 70.3 New Zealand. Talked about it on the podcast a few times before. But my wife and I vacationed in New Zealand for the 2 weeks leading up to the trip, which is great. I definitely am a huge proponent of the racecation. But in terms of optimal performance, I remember like she was like, do we need to like race first and then do the vacation? And I was like, no, I need to rest for race day anyway. This will be great. We'll have 2 weeks where I'm not training. So my body's resting. And I just totally had it backwards, right, on what I needed to do in those weeks leading up to the race, because I would have had a much better performance had I been doing training leading up to that race as opposed to just vacationing and enjoying and not doing anything. So exactly what you said is something that I've learned in my time with TriDot, and I'm sure a lot of other athletes have as well. So I think for most of us, you know, during a typical training session, you know, we're focused on either, you know, hitting our intervals or you know, keeping the easy zones easy and the hard zones hard and pushing ourselves, knowing that we're either trying to build stamina or trying to build power. But it seems like during the taper, we aren't trying to build power or stamina anymore. So what should our focus be during workouts during a taper?
Yeah, so as we mentioned, fitness is a delayed response. So what you're really wanting to do in this taper period is allow the body to respond to and absorb all the training that it has been doing over the past several days, weeks, months, everything that has brought you to this point. Now what you want to do is allow all those adaptations to happen within the body as well as rest up. So, you know, we mentioned that we certainly don't want to neglect that. That is certainly a important component of the taper is resting. That's where a lot of these adaptations occur, is in those times of rest. So that certainly is important. But the focus of the taper is really preparing to race. So there are several things that need to happen in order to race at the best. But really, the focus is really to allow the body to fully recover and fully adapt from all those previous training sessions to really get the fullness of the training that you've done.
Every race is different, and thus it makes sense that every taper would be different to get us ready for that race. What factors play a role in how long our taper should last before race day?
In general, the higher the training volume, the longer the taper. But this is also going to be very individualized for each athlete and based on their ability and need in each discipline. So the individual, their age, their sport age, their recovery rate, injury predisposition, I mean, et cetera, all of that is going to be considered into the length of the taper. And then additionally, the taper should be discipline independent. You may not taper for each discipline at the same time.
So I think this is something that's often misunderstood or neglected as well. They think it's time to taper. So it just happens at a certain specified period of time. Sometimes it's 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It's often an interval of weeks. But you know, that kind of goes back to vague philosophy and principle. Whereas, as Elizabeth mentioned, we have three independent disciplines that each are very different, impacting the body. The recovery demand that a swim session creates is very different than the recovery demand that a run session creates. So we don't necessarily need to taper these at the same rate. And then also, as she mentioned, the individual athlete, everyone's different in their ability to absorb from training, where their strengths and weaknesses are. So primary consideration would be starting with the longest recovery, starting first. So typically this is going to be the run, because the run does cause the most trauma to the body, creates the largest recovery demand. So secondary would be starting with your strengths and continuing to train on your weaknesses and focus on those. So take advantage of those opportunities to get in a few more sessions on those disciplines that you may not be as strong in. So it's a process of balancing the two and where the trade-offs are between providing for that recovery and taking advantage of those additional sessions.
So John, what I'm thinking of as you're saying all of that, I'm thinking to even today. A buddy of mine is Trotout athlete Paul Wolf is training for Ironman Texas, just like I'm training for Ironman Texas. And Paul messaged me literally this morning and was like, you know, hey, what's your workout today? And so we're kind of having fun looking at how Trotout is getting us both ready for this race a little bit differently. I'm a stronger runner than Paul. Paul's a stronger cyclist than I am. And so for him to, like, literally today, you know, my run is an hour and 50 minutes. His run is an hour and 55 minutes. I have a little bit more time at marathon pace than he does. So you know, we're starting to see Trotout is already taking us in different directions a little bit in how long we need to train each discipline, you know, based on what we're stronger at and weaker at. When it comes to the taper, does Trotout also do any customization of what your taper will be based on your ability as an athlete, or are all tapers just kind of backed off in the volume at similar rates?
No, so that's where those strengths and weaknesses are going to come into play, along with things like recovery rate and injury predispositions. Those have to be balanced. But you threw out the example of he's a stronger cyclist. So in this case, Paul being a strong cyclist provides him the opportunity to begin to taper that sooner, whereas you may have a few more sessions delaying your taper so that you can continue to get in a few more sessions prior to race day.
Lucky Paul.
And especially knowing that those bike sessions aren't particularly traumatic. You recover from those relatively quickly. You can afford to do that. And also knowing yours, you're young, you're lean, you recover relatively quickly. So you can afford to take on those additional sessions. Whereas the additional time of taper and recovery, it's that cost benefit relationship. So where are you in that? Is it more beneficial for you to begin to taper? Is it more beneficial for you to get in a few more sessions? And those last few sessions aren't going to have a tremendous effect on your overall result, but they can certainly contribute. They're worth doing. So again, are you better off continuing to train, or are you better off beginning to taper? And yeah, as you mentioned, that's a great thing about Trotout taking care of all that is that's really getting into the weeds. It's getting really technical and really difficult to determine, balancing that across the swim, bike, and run. When exactly do you taper? What is the cost benefit evaluation of additional session for each of the swim, bike, and run? But yeah, fortunately, Trotout is taking care of all that for each individual athlete. So when you begin your taper, how long your taper is, versus how many sessions you kind of squeeze in there at the last minute, almost cramming before the exam, so to speak, really comes down to the individual and how well they're going to be able to maintain and absorb and adapt from those sessions.
Yeah, so everybody's taper truly for every single race is very different based on what we need. So super cool. For a race that is maybe on the schedule as a C priority race, so not one that we are trying to peak for and not one that we are going to taper for, is there a big difference in how well we will be able to perform on the course if we train through the race without a taper?
So it really depends on the athlete and the race. But kind of by definition, that's okay. When it's a C race, it's more so just it's a training opportunity. It's an experience kind of thing. We know emphatically that tapering for a race improves the performance. That's something that's been documented in numerous tests, and so that's clear that the athlete that tapers is going to perform better. So the inverse of that is if you don't taper, you will not perform as well. Now, again, it really takes into consideration which athlete we're talking about and what event we're talking about. A young elite level sprint distance athlete is going to largely perform the same whether they're tapered or not. It's a short race. Being young and fit, they're going to bounce back from their training relatively quickly. So they're not going to see a tremendous difference in their performance whether they're tapered or not. Kind of flip that on the other side. You go long course Ironman with an older athlete that's not quite as fit. They're going to see a much larger delta in their performance between what they did if they just trained into that Ironman race first tapering into it. That would be a much larger delta. And then, you know, there's the broad spectrum in between the two.
So part of having fresh legs and primed muscles and a sharp mind for race day is the sleep we get leading into the big day. Is there anything strategic that we should be doing in our sleep pattern heading into a race?
Yeah, get as much of it as you can. it really should be a priority.
I mean, John, it's such a priority that, I mean, at this point, I'm thinking back now. I mean, we've had 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different podcast episodes where we've talked a little bit about different race day topics where we bring up sleep like every single time. And I've heard the coach John Mayfield rant about, you know, banking sleep the week of many, many times. But again, I would be remiss if somebody maybe missed those or you know, we keep bringing it up because of how important race week sleep is, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, for sure. Sleep is where the body makes those adaptations. It's where we get that prime recovery. And so for us to bring it up over and over and over just kind of highlights.
Plus it's just so enjoyable to sleep.
Why we need it.
It's certainly the inverse side of the coin from all the hard training we do. It's like we go really hard in training. We work our butts off, but then sleep a whole lot, which is like, yeah, polar opposite of that. But I think another important consideration is, this is one of those things like kind of prove me wrong, but you're probably not going to sleep well the night before the race.
I don't.
To a certain extent, perhaps 2, 3, 4 nights out from the race, I would say, especially if it's a new distance, if it's certainly a big event, marquee event. You know, I generally sleep like a baby, but even after all my years of racing, I know that that night before the race, my head is going to be racing with everything I've got to do. You know, did I pack this? Did I remember to do that? And do this in the morning. And then all this, man, I hope I do well. I hope, you know, it's a lot.
I'm dreading the alarm clock so much that I can't fall asleep.
Yeah. And that's the irony is like, we all have these nightmares months out that we're going to sleep through our alarm clock. And I promise you, it will not happen.
You'll with already the exception, be awake. Yep.
There actually was, this was a couple of years ago and it was, I believe it was over in Europe and it was so rare that it was actually documented that a guy actually did sleep through and miss the start of his Ironman race. And it's so rare that I know of it because
it made
yeah, it like made its way around the triathlon world that somebody actually slept through the start. And, you know, so like chances
are he probably didn't taper correctly.
Yeah. Of all the mistakes that can be made on race day, sleeping through the alarm is probably not going to be one of them. You have much more legit things to worry about. But you know, really starting early, especially early in the week, to bank sleep is really going to offset the effects of that last night where you're not sleeping well. So again, I've said it before because we talk about it all the time, but there have been lots of fantastic races, lots of PRs, lots of Kona qualifications after really bad nights of sleep. So getting a good solid 8 to 10 hours the night before the race is not a requirement for a good race, but banking sleep early in the week can really go a long way to help offset the effects of not sleeping well the night before.
Yeah, my last race, John, that you and I raced, Challenge Daytona, is well documented in the Tried Out social media circles that I shaved my arms and legs the night before that race. It took way longer than I thought it was going to. And so John and I got to bed, got to sleep way later than we intended. And yeah, did just fine the next day. So yep, that just tracks right along with what you're saying, John. You can have a great day on the race course without mailing the sleep the night of if you've taken care of it.
I do remember, and I think we even said that's going to make great podcast content when it's days. Like, we were sharing a hotel room, and yeah, my plan was like, I'm going to be in bed by 9 o'clock, and you know, at 11:30, Andrew's still shaving his legs in the shower. and we both had fantastic races after a much later night than anticipated and a real early morning.
So even without an entire episode dedicated to showing up on race day fresh, several times on the podcast, we've talked about scaling back the amount of calories that you consume as you taper towards race day. I've heard Dr. Austin mention this and Coach Jeff Raines as well. What is the best way to cut back on the calories without showing up to the race underfueled?
So I think a big thing is just to be cognizant of what you're consuming. Know and understand that your training load is down, so that your calorie burn is going to be down as well. Your calorie need is less. So it is important to maintain a healthy diet. We don't really want to gain weight in those last 2 weeks, but it certainly is possible if we're have that balance off where the training is down, the calorie burn is down. So the nutrition needs to be adjusted as well.
And I think here, just being intentional and strategic is really important. I have almost all of my meals and snacks planned out for race week just to try and make sure that I'm cutting back a little bit and avoid overeating. I think a lot of athletes will end up eating too much because that's just the habit that they've created with the training. And now they've got more time to look in the pantry or maybe cook a little bit more too. Uh-huh. And then the other thing I'd say here is to save those splurges for after the race. I mean, John already mentioned you need to, you know, maintain quality nutrition headed into race day. And so I eat healthy most of the time, but I'll absolutely be having like a burger and a milkshake or nachos when it's over. But that's when it's over. So eating really healthy still leading into the race just to make sure that you're fueling for that performance.
In my experience, there are two types of triathletes during a taper. The first embraces the extra downtime wholeheartedly and uses the decreased volume to just relax. And the second feels a little out of sorts because they aren't training as much. You know, they see extra hours in their day that used to be filled with a training session. And so they're tempted to fill that time with maybe some other race prep things, maybe some extra training volume they aren't scheduled to do. Is there anything right or wrong with either of these approaches?
So definitely not a right or wrong. Personally, I love the taper. I've been working hard for months, and you get a little tangible break here. So it's kind of almost a victory lap before the victory lap of race day. And I think a lot of this has to do with personality. I tend to be laid back, pretty relaxed. So I'm not stressing over too much. And also I think it's a certain amount of faith and confidence. I've been doing this long enough to know, kind of know what I'm doing, know what I'm in for, also have faith in my training and preparations and all that. So, again, I think it's more of a personality thing and just me personally being a little more laid back. I think that's why I approach it as a great. Now I get to back off a little bit, and
that's me. That's me too. Yeah.
Well, that's not me. So, Andrew, you said, you know, there's two types of triathletes during the taper. We've got those two types here in
here
this
at
recording
the table on yes. the podcast. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I would agree. It probably does have a lot to do with personality type. I am not a laid back personality, and the taper is hard for me. I absolutely love training. I love the routine of training. I want to do more of it during that race week, but I know that I shouldn't for my best performance. And so to help fill those hours that are usually dedicated to training, I'll usually schedule some appointments for race week just to kind of help fill that time.
Okay.
So I'll get my hair cut. I'll go get my nails done. A few years ago, I took care of like all my annual doctor appointments during race week. So I went to the dentist and the optometrist. I mean, all activities that are very low stress.
I don't know.
Restful.
The dentist is pretty high stress for me.
Oh, yeah. See, I like the dentist. But, you know, that kept me from those anxious feelings of like, oh my gosh, I've got this extra time because I had it filled, but just kind of with those appointments.
Okay.
So that's been a strategy for me who's not a laid back personality and has a hard time with the taper.
I'm laid back until I go to the dentist or go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Definitely opposites.
Yeah, I'm very open with my dentist about how much I dislike visits there. And they're gracious about it, and they do the best they can, and I do the best I can, and we all move on with our lives. But I don't want to go on race week. But both of what you're sharing, I think for whoever's listening, you know, they're going to identify with one of you, right? And it just goes to show that you can have success on race day either way. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, make the most of your personality and be understanding of your own personality. If you're lazy and kick and pack, great. If you're a little bit anxious, a little bit jittery, you know, you heard from Elizabeth, there's some strategies on how to deal with that. But give yourself some grace. It's not that there's not a wrong personality type on race week leading up to the race. You just have to know what your personality is and navigate that week accordingly.
It's not a problem until it's a problem either way. So if you're too laid back, obviously that's a problem. If you're too anxious, too stressed out, obviously that's a problem. But you know, it's all about kind of keeping it within the lines, keeping it where it should be. And so again, just personality wise, chances are you're fine. And again, it's not a problem until it is.
Traveling for a race, or even if you're racing close to home, sometimes our race week schedule might not perfectly align with every workout as prescribed on the day that it's prescribed, What advice do you have for athletes on which sessions they should try to do at all costs and which they can kind of flex in and out of the schedule with no harm done?
So those last couple of days, there's a lot more flexibility there. Something I mentioned previously was trying to maintain the frequency and sequence of the sessions. Within those last couple of days, that's not quite as important. We've mentioned before that the taper is about allowing the body to make adaptations and recover. At this point in the taper, when you're a couple of days out, those adaptations are largely made. So it really focuses to more about recovery and topping off the energy stores, topping off the tank as far as that goes. So especially when you're traveling, and especially for those bigger races like Ironman, where you have bags to pack and you got to drop your bike off the day before and all that. There's a lot going on. So I would say in those scenarios, especially 2-3 days out, really focus on those things. Obviously those things have to get done.
Yeah.
So focus on getting those done and be efficient in that plan, get them done early. I always advise that. So you should be able to get those sessions in. But really no session in the last few days is going to make your race. But the wrong session can sabotage your race. So that's something to be careful about. So, it kind of goes into that panic mode. Don't do that, because you're better off not doing a session than doing a session wrong in those last couple of days.
If we have nailed our taper, how should we feel physically heading into race day?
So ideally, rested, loose, no soreness. So all that has largely been taken care of. Again, hopefully you've been banking some sleep. So again, rested, loose, because you've been doing those sessions, maintaining that intensity that's going to help keep you loose, and worked out all the soreness and all that, which for some may be a little unfamiliar, maybe a little odd feeling to feel like that, because it's been so long since you have. It's been 3-4 months of gradually increasing your training volume and almost existing in a perpetual state of depletion and soreness and being tired. So it may be a little unfamiliar for those that been training for a long time.
I mean, all of the tips that we've shared today should help you feel your best, you know, that rested, loose, ready to go feeling. But I'd also kind of like to throw out there that if you don't feel that way on race morning, like, it's still there. Don't panic. Don't be like, oh my gosh, I do feel tired. I've had race mornings where I've just felt terrible.
Yeah, that's a great
point. And my warm-up was incredibly challenging. And yet it all comes together when you cross that timing mat to get started.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Elizabeth, is you can't tell in the morning. You might think you can tell if it's going to be a great day or not. You really can't tell, you know, what your muscles are going to do until you get out there. I've had training sessions like that. I've had training sessions where, you know, during the first 5-10 minutes on the bike, I'm like, oh man, I'm not going to be able to hit my zones today. And then it goes great. You know, you just can't tell. So don't panic. Settle
right.
in.
Yeah. And hopefully you do feel rested, but if you don't,
it's okay.
All right.
The muscles are the fitness is there. The muscles are there. You've put in the work. You've put in the training. Another thing I'll say, Elizabeth, is you mentioned the warm-up as well. After we've done our taper and gotten all the way through it, race morning's here, go listen to podcast episode 67, the why and how of your pre-race warm-up, because the things that pro-triathlete Elizabeth James and Coach Jeff Rain share on that episode are kind of the finishing touches, right? You've tapered.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
And now here's the finishing touches to make sure that you are on the starting line, optimized, ready for a killer performance. So go check that one out as well before your next race day.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
From riding outside, taking a spin class, or riding at home on the trainer, there are many, many ways to execute your bike training sessions. And for my folks who spend time inside on a trainer, we all know it really helps to have something to help you pass the time as you pedal your way into a mental abyss. This fact has given rise to online training platforms such as TrainerRoad, Ruvi, and Zwift, which all have different ways of providing a mental stimulus and sense of community to our lonely indoor rides. All these platforms are used by athletes in the TriDot community as different features appeal to different folks. But Zwift in particular has really caught on, as we all have just hundreds of athletes with TriDot in their username on Zwift. One of these athletes took some initiative and formed a Saturday morning group ride. Welcome to anyone and everyone in the TriDot family. It's gained a lot of buzz, with a lot of folks enjoying being able to knock out the Saturday trainer ride together. And so I wanted to have TriDot Ambassador Brian Mull join the show and tell us all about the new TriDot Saturday Morning Zwift Ride. So Brian, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun getting this started and having you on a couple rides. And I know we've talked in the past about getting together for this, so I'm glad to have the opportunity to do it today.
Yes, absolutely. So Brian, kind of take me back to the beginning. You know, what gave you the idea to start a TriDot Saturday group ride? And what has it been like watching it get bigger and bigger every week?
Yeah, so I've been on Zwift for a few years now. And a couple of years ago, I joined a Zwift team. And one of the things the Zwift team does is they have a Saturday morning group ride. But that their group ride operates more like a typical group ride would, where you have people of various, you know, cats that are getting together. And they're all kind of... They're riding together, but if someone drops off the back, when they get to a top of a climb, the group waits up for them and everything. Yeah. They'll wait for them and rejoin up at the top of hills and all. So just being on that and riding with other riders kind of gives you that sense of community that's there. And I was trying to think about, you know, how we could do this with TriDot. And it's you know, really hard since everyone is doing their own prescribed training, you know, getting everyone to be able to kind of stay together and have that community in a group ride while being able to do the work that you're supposed to be doing yourself.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So just, you know, finally finding a way to do that one day, searching around and getting that started and watching it grow and watching the people who are, you know, getting their training done the right way and having fun doing it. It's been a joy to watch.
So group rides on Zwift do take a little bit of logistical understanding just in order to join in and kind of get the full experience. Through some trial and error week to week, Brian, you've become the TriDot guru on the group ride experience. Talk to us about how Zwift's group ride feature works.
Yeah, so first of all, if you're on Zwift and you've done group rides or races before, you're not going to notice that much of a difference in how you do those and how you do the group rides. Basically what you do is you just get your, however you normally do it, you get your workout loaded into Zwift. Once it's in there, I think we're going to talk a little bit later about how people can actually join this, but yeah. I'll get a request from you that you're interested in joining the ride and I'll send you an invitation.
And that's key to know. I mean, you have to have joined the ride beforehand. I've made that mistake one week. And you have to have joined it ahead of time to have that group ride pop up on your Zwift app as an option to join.
Right. So I'll send you that invitation. It'll send it to Zwift for you. You'll select that you want to join. Then Saturday morning, about 15 minutes before the ride, is the earliest you can kind of jump in and click to go to the ride start location. Once you get into the starting pen there, you're sitting on the side of the road on your virtual trainer just spinning away. And then you go back into the garage screen, the menu screen, and load your ride. And once your ride is loaded and the clock hits zero, we all take off together and theoretically all stay together in this little rubber band that doesn't matter what paces you're going at. But we've all quickly learned that that Zwift doesn't always work the way we want it to. And we do occasionally get gaps that build in. But most of the gaps that build, it's two or three who kind of stick together. So in general, everyone gets to kind of be with a group of people, but there usually is a pretty large contingency that does stay together.
Yeah, and that rubber band feature you're talking about, that's Zwift's way of making sure if I'm, you know, riding at 20-something miles an hour and someone else is only putting out watts to hold 15 miles an hour, that rubber band feature keeps us together despite how hard or soft we're pedaling. And honestly... this is something probably a little over a year ago, the TriDot staff talked about getting going for our riders on Zwift. We were at an endurance exchange conference, kind of a multi-sport conference, and Zwift was there and gave a kind of a couple sessions that kind of sparked some ideas. And so anyway, so long story short, we looked into kind of starting something like this. And at the time, we weren't aware of the rubber band feature, and we were like, well, you know, it's... You know, if someone's doing a zone two training session and someone else is doing threshold and hold, those people can't stay together.
Exactly.
And so when Zwift created that rubber band feature, it gave us a way to do these group rides and stay together no matter what your training session is. So it's a super cool feature that, to your point, works most of the time, but not all the time.
Yeah, and then they implemented that rubber band feature, and they never really advertised the fact that once you're in your group ride, you could go back and pull in a workout. So that was kind of the next step. It's one thing if you're in the rubber band, but then how do you see your training zones and everything where you're supposed to be for your workout on the screen at the same time? So someone figured that out and posted a write up on the web about it, and I stumbled across it one day, and that's kind of when the light bulb went off and said, "This is how it can happen." It's actually set up perfectly for TriDot.
Yeah, no, it really is. It just kind of took a little bit of trial and error and figuring it out. So Brian, you've been great about anytime somebody on the I Am TriDot Facebook group asks about the group ride, you've been very, very great about kind of walking them through how to join it. So thank you for that.
There's actually a video. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, there's actually a video you've posted to the group before that maybe we'll try to feature somewhere for athletes to find after this that kind of explains to somebody how to join it and everything. So
that'd be great.
But it's a lot of fun. I mean, Coach John Mayfield and myself have both joined this ride multiple times, and having just the group chat up on your phone, you know, and kind of participating in the workout alongside so many other TriDotters, it really helps big time, you know, just that the time goes by and it livens up the experience, just chatting with folks. And even if you're not doing the chatting, just seeing what people are saying and seeing the conversation unfolding in front of you. You know, Brian, since starting this, you know, how much have you seen kind of the chatting and the community aspect of this ride help athletes connect to our TriDot tribe?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because when you get onto the ride at the start, I mean, everyone's just going at it. I mean, the talking's going back and forth. We're all joking with one another. You know, there's a core group that comes almost every week, and we've really gotten to know each other pretty well. And then all of a sudden, at one point during the ride, it's just a silence falls across the group. And, you know, that's when everyone's in their Z4 zones and is just kind of plugging away at it. And then as individuals hit their zone 2 rest breaks, they kind of jump back in and chime in. We kind of talk about before the ride starts who's doing what workout, and we know how long these different sessions last. So as one group is kind of hitting their rest area, they're talking to the ones who are in their hard sections, encouraging them and pushing them forward.
Oh, that's great.
After the group ride, I generally post up a post-ride report and try and keep it kind of light and funny and all. And those have been fun to see the conversations that take place there. And it's been interesting to notice that, you know, those individuals who are in those group rides are the ones that I see kind of talking over and over again and sharing over and over again on the TriDot Facebook page. So I do feel like the ride is kind of doing a pretty good job of bringing this group of riders together. And hopefully as we keep moving forward, we'll continue to encourage new riders to join us.
Yeah, and for athletes listening who, whether they're on Zwift or not, you know, if they're listening and they're like, man, gee, that sounds like fun, and they want to join this ride, how can they best get connected with you and join in on the fun?
Well, I'm always available. Well, I'm usually available on Facebook. I don't want to say always because I have work to do and stuff myself. But I'm on Facebook a lot, so if you drop me a message with questions, I'll always get back to you on that. But there's a video that I put together that is posted in the video media section of the TriDot Facebook page. If you open that up, you'll see it there. I also, every Saturday after the group ride is over, I will post the group ride for the next week. And in the instructions for that group ride, you'll find everything that you need to know about how to join. Specifically, the most important piece is a link that you have to go to complete a very short form where basically you drop in your TriDot name or your Zwift name. And that will tell me who to look for in Zwift Companion to be able to invite you. You have to be following me for me to be able to send you that invite. That's Zwift's rules, not mine. So once you fill out that form, everything else is pretty much self-explanatory. All the instructions are there, and you just kind of show up on the day of and hopefully have a great ride with us.
Yep, and there are, I believe, group rides on Zwift that you can just join, that anybody can join, but those do not have the rubber banding feature, and that's kind of the differentiating factor to have the group stay together. It's got to be that invite-only format, so people need to reach out to you and kind of get the invite. And once they've done that once, they're in for good. So it's a little bit of
they do have to request the invite each week.
Okay,
because what happens is So the group rides and the meetups are a little bit different in that the group rides are public events, meetups are private events, and they're capped off at 100 invites. Okay. So what I used to do in the beginning is once you've joined me once, I just would send you automatically an invite every week. But now we're over 100 riders who have requested invites. So just to keep it fair for everyone who wants to join, I require that each week you fill out the form. Just again, it takes, you know, 10 seconds to fill out the form. You just fill out the form each week telling me that you want to ride, and I'll send you that invite. And that just keeps it fair for everyone.
Great. Nope. Love that. Love the explanation. I will say for folks, if you want to fit in on your first Tri.Zwift group ride, change your Zwift jersey to the black and red kind of swirly pattern that every athlete, it's one of the original Zwift jerseys that everybody starts with. If you're brand new to the platform, you've got it there. I forget off the top of my head exactly which what its name is, but you can't miss it. It's the only it's the blackest and reddest jersey available to wear. So if you want to fit in, go ahead and switch your Zwift avatar to that jersey ahead of time. If you want to stand out, you can wear whatever you want, and that's all good. You're welcome either way. So Brian, what just before we kind of call it a day and sign off for the show, what races are you kind of training for personally this year?
So I have my two A races right now. One of them is one that I've done the past 2 or 3 years, and it is the Sugarman. I do duathlons and not triathlons. So I [S2] Cool. [S1] Do the Sugarman duathlon, which is based around Lafayette, Louisiana. And then this year I'm going to be doing the duathlon national championships in Tuscaloosa in May. So those are my two big ones right now. I'll do a couple of other local ones also.
Yeah, well, we love our duo athletes and our aquathon athletes, and it's all multi-sport. It's all in the family. So we'll see you on Zwift to keep that bike training going.
Sounds good.
Well, that's it for today, folks. A big thanks to coaches John Mayfield and Elizabeth James for talking to us about the race taper. Enjoying the podcast? Have any questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to tryout.com/podcast to get your voice on the show asking your question. We'll do it all again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the Tri.Dot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to tri.dot.com and start your free trial today. Tri.Dot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.